Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. We have a great show for you today. Thich Nhat Hanh, the very famous Vietnamese Buddhist monk, has passed away. He passed away on January 22nd, I believe at the age of 95. He was a Buddhist monk. He was a peace activist. He was an author, a poet, a teacher, and a founder of the Plum Village tradition. And he was also a major influence on Western practices of Buddhism. I also know he was quite the environmentalist, and he often took part in various social movements or events to promote being good to the environment and so on. He always sought to raise awareness about the interconnectedness of all elements in nature. So we are going to feature a talk by him today. And actually, I always felt very grateful that I got to see Thich Nhat Hanh speak at the St. Joseph's Oratory in 2005. And if you live in Montreal and you are a fan of Thich Nhat Hanh, then maybe you were there as well. But today we're going to feature a talk or a discussion that he had back in 2011 between himself, David Suzuki, and the Vancouver mayor, Gregor Robertson, although in this discussion you don't really hear him very much, but you also do hear David Suzuki Foundation Chair Jim Hogan, who kind of leads the discussion. So this took place in Vancouver, British Columbia, in 2011, and we are going to feature it now. All right, and so this is Thich Nhat Hanh. You're going to hear him speak first. We pick it up somewhere into the event after it's already begun, and I hope you enjoy it.
There are good desire, like the desire to love, to protect, to help, to serve, the desire to be loved, the desire to understand, because this is a very deep desire in each human being. We want to know, we want to understand. And that desire, if fulfilled, we become a happier person. We want to love, we want to protect, we want to save. That is a real desire in every one of us, the desire to love. You cannot set a limit to that kind of desire, because you can continue to learn, to understand more about yourself, about the world outside of you. You can continue to develop your love into the infinite. And in Buddhism, we speak about love is something that has no frontiers. So I think as far as understanding and love, there's no danger if you want
getting
more.
Too much, yeah.
During the summer opening of Plum Village, a child came up and asked this question in front of the great audience. My father, he knows very well that smoking is not good for him, but he cannot stop smoking. What shall I do? And the child was just 5, 6 years old. And I think that is a theme, a subject of meditation. And I think if we can answer that question, we will have a lot of insight about how to handle the situation of our planet. It's very difficult to offer an answer to the child if you do not have the time to look deeply into the situation. When we speak about awakening, Buddhism is about awakening.
Now, I used to smoke. And I knew very well it was harmful. But I was, well, I mean, I smoked for, I guess, all kinds of reasons. But my son, who must have been about 8 or 9, was he, Tara? Came home and he had learned in school about what the effect of smoking was. And he kept saying, "Dad, why are you smoking?" So, like that child. And he used to torment me. I'd be smoking and he'd take it out of my mouth and break it. Or he'd take the cigarettes out of my pocket and flush it down the toilet. And I was annoyed at the beginning until I realized my son loves me. And it hurts him to see me doing what I was doing. And how could I make him feel pain because of my actions? And I stopped smoking immediately. And much of what we try to do in the environmental area and climate change is to try to remind adults who are making the decisions and the ways of life, living the ways of life that are creating the problem, that it's children and grandchildren that are going to feel ever greater impacts of the way they live. Do you think that might be a way of getting to people's hearts?
Yes. Definitely. Love. I was trying to tell the child that your father, in order to be able to stop smoking, he should have your love. Your love will be an important force in order to help him to stop. But there are other things that can help him also. I think if I tell you how we operate as a community of practice in the Buddhist tradition, it might help. We monks or nuns, we receive the precepts. For monks, there are 250 precepts to observe in order for you to be a real monk. And for nuns, you have about 380. We do not consider the precepts as something that reduce our freedom, because the precept, we call it mindfulness training, is to guarantee your liberty, like not drinking alcohol. It does not take away your liberty, because if you are addicted to alcohol, you lose your freedom. You are no longer yourself. And that is why practicing the precept is to guarantee your freedom. And each precept guarantee a zone of freedom. And that is why when we observe and practice according to the precepts, we retain our freedom as a monk or as a nun, or as a lay practitioner. And then our tradition is that every fortnight we have to come together and recite the precepts together to remind us that we have to live and practice according to these precepts. I think the town hall can organize the recitation of some kind of text about living in such a way that make a future possible for our children. And that text might be written by the Council of Sages, the City Council, and other wise people. It is equivalent to the text of the precepts, our precepts. It should be agreed by the whole population. And then you recite it every fortnight at the town hall. You recite it at school. You recite it in every family. That will remind us that we should live according to that way in order for us to have peace, happiness, freedom, and a future. organizing. Mm. And then in our tradition, if you are very sick, you cannot go to the recitation. You have to delegate someone. Because before the recitation of precepts, we always ask, is anyone absent? And whether that person has asked another the person to delegate him and to tell the community that he has observed the precept and has not violated the precepts. We always ask the question. And then there is a brother who said that, well, brother so-and-so is so sick this morning, he could not come to the precept. He has delegated brother so-and-so to represent him, and he wants to tell the community that he has observed well and has not violated any of the precepts before the precept recitation can take place. That is something that I think we can imitate to do in the life of the city. Citizens have to come together in one way or another in order to remind each other that this is the way of life that guarantees us a future. And then senior members of the community should show that they are an example. The mayor, the city council, the people in the government, they should show the people that they are abiding by the spirit and the way. I think it's very important. And I think that we as citizens, we would like only to vote to the people who can have that kind of style of life, because they can be our elder. They can set an example. And I think using the vote, we can select the people who can represent us not only in political affairs, but who can inspire hope and confidence. When someone we elect into the government doesn't have a good behavior, and his life does not set an example for the population, well, that is to be desired. And that is why by our vote, we can select the good people to represent us, not only as having the talent to run business of the country, but to represent us as far as ethics is concerned, because we need a global ethics in order for a future to be possible. And if senior citizens do not represent that kind of ethics, we do not have enough hope. And if someone in the community of monks and nuns have violated one of the precepts, he has to come out and confess, and then he make the promise not to repeat again, and he go observe a number of days in order to practice purification, so that he will receive again as a full member of the Sangha, of the community. And sometimes he has to practice 3 months in order to regain full membership of the Sangha. I think if anyone in the city, in the society that has committed some kind of action, that is harmful to the environment, to the society, should also be treated like that with love. We want not to punish him or her, but we want him or her to practice in such a way that she become a full citizen, member of the community again. So
that's a very hard standard to set, I must say.
I think because the idea is not to punish. The idea is to help him to be a good member of society again. And motivation is love and not punishment. Mm. And I think we can learn a lot from that kind of tradition, sangha building, community building. And you can realize your goal only if you have a good environment like a sangha, like community that follow and represent truly the spiritual path.
You know, in many ways, the Declaration of Interdependence,
yes, yes.
which we wrote before the United Nations Earth Summit in Rio in 1992, and we translated into a number of languages and took it to Rio, was an attempt to do that, to make a declaration on this place that we, you know, our home, Mother Earth, and where we belong in it. And it was meant to be an inspiring, uplifting statement. But I love the idea of doing it at a local level and having something, a declaration of what we are, to remind people of that bigger picture in which we... Mm. Yeah.
What do you think, Greg?
Well, it's a compelling concept. And the challenge, I think, is getting a consensus in a very culturally diverse, politically diverse community, getting consensus around a commitment, a higher level commitment, which I think people might easily make if there's if it's evidence-based science that we can rely upon, if it's ethics and responsibility and accountability. I think you probably get almost everybody to agree on very high level fundamentals. And then the trouble starts when things happen and they're not aligned with those commitments. And the restorative approach to justice or accountability that would need to take place. So it sounds like a whole, an up-leveling of our entire community and political system to make it more accountable but also try and get everyone committed to some basic goals that are fundamental to our survival, which is a big leap for a city council to make when our focus is picking up the garbage, making sure the waste is dealt with, making sure the people can get around the city, very kind of basic operations, and we're not generally relied upon for the big inspiring leadership. And in fact, we get criticized for trying to set big goals for the community, like to end homelessness, to be the greenest city in the world in 10 years. These are met with criticism by some, and maybe it's politically motivated, but there are many who will express themselves. There are many who will pull the cigarette out of your mouth and break it repeatedly if they don't agree. And there aren't so many who come from a place of we must have this, we must have these changes, we must improve our community governance to respect our children and grandchildren, and they will not relent. They will express their voice at every opportunity. I think some of that voice is lost or missing, where many members of the community are disempowered, are disillusioned with climate change or with poverty and suffering, and they don't express themselves every day. They don't tell the ones they love that this is not okay, and they're going to take action every day to turn it around. And I don't know how we tap into that to get people to be more communicative, expressive, to really stand up and take action.
As you know, in this province, there have been a long history of battles over resources, forestry, fisheries, rivers, and during the 60s and 70s, the battles were very, very heated. And in forestry, for example, they were either you're for jobs for loggers, or you're for protection of the forest. It's spotted owls versus loggers. And we learned that when we have these battles, there's always a loser. And somehow it seemed to me that we needed to lift the discussion up to say, wait a minute now, can we come to any common agreements? And I think that's what Ty is saying, is that we've got to come together and have some statement about our basic humanity and our needs that get us above all that scrabbling down in the weeds. Mm-hmm. We don't do that much anymore, I think, and we really need that so that we can all agree that we're working for the same goal in the end.
I think we have to deal with the feeling of despair, which can be very overwhelming and which will paralyze everything. And despair is growing in our society. And because of that, we feel helpless. We don't believe that we can do anything to reverse the situation. Again, I think community building is very important. We should have the kind of leadership that inspires confidence. And we can begin to build communities that can inspire hope. And this is what we can do. A group of 4, 5, 6 people can sit together and discuss how to create a community and adapt a kind of a style of living that can make a future possible. In fact, like in our community, Plum Village in France, we are many hundreds of people living together 24 hours a day. And no one of us has a private car. No one of us has a private bank account. Everything is communal. And we do not eat meat. We do not drink alcohol. We learned that being vegetarian is one of the good ways to protect the environment. And when people come to our place in order to practice, because thousands of people come to practice with us, they see that we are happy people, although we don't consume a lot. But we have brotherhood, sisterhood. We smile, we laugh, we are happy. And we are able to help many, many people come to us who suffer because of this or that. And people who come to our place and stay 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, get the hope, get the transformation and healing. And they are free from despair. Many become free from despair. I think to create a community to show people that living simply and happily is something possible. And you cannot be happy unless you have love, brotherhood, and sisterhood. Because people believe, many people believe that happiness is made of fame, power, wealth, sex. But there are so many people who suffer deeply even if they have a lot of these kind of things. Many of them commit suicide. So people should see by themselves that living happily, living simply and happily is something possible if you know how to handle the suffering in you, handle the love in you, how to create brotherhood and sisterhood. If you do not have love, you cannot continue and you can destroy yourself. You are looking for consumption in order to cover up the suffering only. That is not to live, that is trying only to survive. And many of us in our society are just trying to survive. And that is why we have to help people to learn how to live again. Before coming here, I have suggested to the mayor of Vancouver that from time to time he could organize a walk like we used to do in every day in Plum Village. We have organized a walk like that in New Delhi, in Los Angeles, in Frankfurt, in Rome. And people come just to celebrate life by walking slowly together, holding the hands of children and enjoy walking. And usually every walk like that started by gathering in a park where they receive, people receive instructions as how to enjoy breathing in, breathing out, and making steps and get in touch with the wonders of life around. Walking, you don't ask for anything, you can, you don't criticize anyone. You just come together, enjoy each other, and walking together like that. And the walk is always healing and nourishing. And we can organize like that so that people learn that happiness is possible without consuming. Because you come, you just use your leg to walk, you just use your lungs to breathe, you just use your eye to get in touch with the beauty of nature. And that needs some training in order to do that. Our children need to be taught how to enjoy the beauty of life, nature, and so on. And in our retreat, you see, one of the things that we had a retreat of 800 people in the University of British Columbia. Every day we had a walking meditation, and we enjoy every step. And halfway we sit down, and the children enjoy very much, although we are completely silent. And we sit down on the grass. We don't do anything. We just sit down and breathe and enjoy each other. And that is one of the best moments of the retreat. People enjoy it very much. We don't consume anything. We don't have music. We don't have song. We don't have alcohol. We don't have anything. We just sit down and we enjoy each other's presence. Because everyone in the retreat know how to breathe in and enjoy the in-breath, to breathe and to know that you are alive on this beautiful planet can bring already joy. And even the children, they enjoy deeply the walking and the sitting. So we have to educate our citizens for them to see that happiness does not lie in consumption, but lie in the fact that you are free enough, you have enough time to enjoy yourself, to enjoy each other, to enjoy the environment. And you know that in the Buddhist tradition, we have a practice like a tea ceremony. We just have one cup of tea, but we spend 1.5 hours together. Why do you need 1.5 hours in order to enjoy a cup of tea? Because a tea ceremony is an art. If you know how to sit, how to breathe, how to look, how to listen, and how to be together the 1 hour and a half for a ceremony can bring a lot of joy. And you don't consume much, one cup of tea only. So we have lost our capacity of being happy because you are so busy. And busy what? Busy trying to cover up the suffering inside.
Well, I want to thank you. I joined your walk today around. And I don't do that often. And I was overwhelmed with how green, all the green things that are allowing us to breathe. That they, and I was explaining to Jim that all of those leaves are just asking for sunlight to convert that energy into chemicals that we then depend on for our energy. And I felt an overwhelming sense of gratitude for all the green things that make the planet habitable. And we don't do enough of that walking to feel, to even think and realize that. Yeah. Yes, thank you for that.
So I have this question that this is, I think, very powerful advice. But the question that I have is for some of the people that I'm suspicious won't take that advice. That we, you know, at the Suzuki Foundation, one of the things that we do, and David is loved by Canadians and trusted by, he's the most trusted person in the country according to a number of research polls. Every year he comes out as people trust David more than other people, certainly when it comes to the environment, hands down, for many, many years. So we have a responsibility to speak out on behalf of the environment. But it's a very difficult job because there are so many people who are up to mischief about these issues. In the United States, for example, over the past, since 2008, the number of people who think that climate scientists are debating whether or not climate change is happening has increased by about 12%. So almost half of Americans think that climate scientists disagree about whether or not climate change is happening. And I asked a friend of mine, Andrew Weaver, who's one of Canada's leading climate scientists, how many climate scientists would agree with that, and he said fairly close to 0%. And you know, Gregor would be able to explain this better than I can, but I think that when the public is misinformed and doesn't think that a problem is a problem, then it's very difficult for leaders to lead. And the Prime Minister of Canada can do a lot more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions than I can, or than David, than any one of us can do. So although I understand what you're saying in terms of the community and the need for that, and I think that that's the root of the solution, I would worry that we sort of take our eyes off these people who are up to mischief on the bigger levels. So I don't know what your reaction to that is, David. I mean, I know you speak out all the time about this, and sometimes very forcefully.
Well, I would agree with Ty that, you know, we have the vote, and we can vote and on the basis of these needs from our politicians, the vision and the commitment to make a difference. The problem is that a lot of us aren't voting in Canada, but also the discussion in Canada is down in the weeds. We're not having the discussion at that high level, and down in the weeds is where you get all kinds of confusion and the opportunity for mischief on the part of often the corporate sector. So I think the challenge for us is that it's so clear, the science indicates that humanity has grown so powerfully that we've become a geological force. There have never been so many people with the ability to affect the chemistry, the physics, and the biology of the planet. And there is a crunch coming when the biosphere has been so altered that there are going to be collapses and inability to sustain the number of people. So this is very big crisis. In fact, there are many scientists now who are saying it's too late. We've passed too many critical tipping points. So I'm wondering how you would respond to that. It's the time crunch that we're all concerned about.
Well, the issue of the despair come back again. I think if we don't know how to deal with despair, and then the situation will get worse and worse. We have to accept that this civilization can be destroyed, not by something outside, but by ourselves. In fact, many civilizations have been destroyed in the past. And this civilization, if it is destroyed, that's not something very new. And to accept that can already be helpful. Know that there are people who have cancer and who are told that they can only survive for a few months. And in the beginning, they struggle against that. They cannot accept. But finally, they have to accept to die. And once they have accepted, they will have to die. And they have peace. And they know that they have only 90 days or a few months to live. And they know how to cherish the days that are left of for them to live. And they live so relaxingly, very deeply, and enjoy the days that are left them to live. And because that way of living help them to recover. And the cancer can go away. And that has happened several times in the history. You know that I came to Canada to offer a retreat, and there was a man about 35, and his doctor said he's going to die in a few months. He was sitting next to me on the left, and I said, "Well, it's okay. Because everyone will have to die. But can you, do you have the capacity of to enjoy a cup of tea with me right now? Even if you have to die in 3 months, do you think you have the capacity to enjoy this cup of tea with me now, because you have been waiting for this moment?" And he said, "Okay." So he tried to have his tea. And after that, he joined the retreat. And 11 years later, he's still alive. So it's very important, our mental formation, our mind. I think if we allow despair to take over, we have no strength left in order to do anything at all. And that is why we should do anything that can prevent despair to happen, including meditation. So when we meditate on civilizations that have been destroyed in the past, and if we can accept, we may have peace and become a better worker for the environment. Because people who know what is happening but allow it to happen and cannot do anything, there are so many of them. Because they have despair in them, and they try only to survive. And if we can help them to sort out the inside, if we can help them to have hope, if you can help them to have peace in themselves, and suddenly they have the strength to come back to themselves and giving a hand of contribution And that person will be an instrument for the protection of the environment.
So in accepting the reality that this could very well end disastrously does not mean one retreats to become passive then, but that one can remain active, but with that acceptance. Yeah. That
because we can look like this, 100 years, 200 years is nothing. If you talk about geological time, this civilization might be destroyed, and it may take 1 billion years more in order to have another civilization. And that already happened in the past. And we have to accept reality as it is. And acceptance like that can bring us peace. And with that kind of peace, we have force, and we can do, and we can reverse the situation. And meditation play a role. to meditate means to look deeply. And to look deeply, you get the insight. And with that insight, you are free from despair, anger, and you are a better worker for the environment.
For me, the acceptance of civilizations that come and go, I mean, it's obvious, history informs you of that. Indeed, extinction of a species, including ours, is a natural part of evolution, that you species have to go extinct as conditions change and new species will evolve. So it would be astonishing if human beings were the exception to that rule of extinction over time. But I have grandchildren who are very, very precious to me, and the idea that they will just be part of the calamity that I see coming is very, very difficult for me to accept.
I would like to stress again on the importance of community building. That is one of the things we can do. You organize a community, and you with your friends live in such a way that can become a message. If everyone can live like that, surely there will be a future for our children. And when people come to visit us, to be with us, they have hope. And the city can become a community. If people can come to the city and see the way the people in the city live, they have confidence, they have hope. And we can bring all our talent and energy and love in order to build our city in such a way that when people come and look at our city, they restore their hope in the future.
There's a lot of hopeful stories building in this city from 15 years of significant population growth and economic growth at the same time that our emissions, our carbon emissions, our use of cars has declined dramatically by 15%, so about a percent a year less carbon and car use while our population and economy grow. And this is a very unusual trend in the world's cities right now, but there's a grain of hope in it, that a city that is committed and that sets aside the despair or perceived inevitability of calamity and says, we can be a stronger community, we can change our ways of getting around, looking after each other, that we can make change in a relatively short time. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of hope in that, and certainly for generations to come. And the converse is that it becomes a very desirable city, and it's a beautiful place. People from all over the world come here for the beauty and the sense of community, and that it's a city that embraces these changes. And that creates challenges for my kids, the next generations to live here. It's not affordable to live here now. People come with money, and they want to be part of this, and that makes it difficult. So it's creating other challenges mm-hmm. for us. Mm-hmm. When the hope, in my mind, is that what we can do here is what any city could do. That kind of community building and change is possible anywhere. And instead of concentrating in places like Vancouver, that cities can learn and adapt and become more livable, reduce their impact, and strengthen community. But I don't think it comes, as you've said many times, from a place of despair. I think I think there has to be a sense now of the challenge that you've spoken of.
Hope, yes. Yeah.
There is a feeling of guilt from the people who are wealthy, who are getting rich. Many chiefs of owners of big business, they make a lot of money, and they know that they are doing damage. They have been doing damage to environment. So that feeling of guilt, they cannot escape. So they try to organize, set apart some fund, and to do charity work in order to ease a little bit the feeling of guilt in themselves. And I don't think that people can really be happy with that feeling of guilt in themselves, even if they have a lot of money and power. But when you organize a community where people can live and demonstrate that living in such a way will assure a future for mankind. And although we live more simply, but we are happy because we know that we are doing our best. We don't have that guilt. Because if we know that if people live in this way, and then there will be no destruction. So when people witness to that kind of spirit, see the happiness of someone who live, who work, who eat, who drink in such a way that make a future possible and have that happiness, that they are doing the best already, they don't need to be guilty. And then this is very healing. And we need, our society need a lot of healing. Mm. And healing in this way is not possible without a good environment. That is why building a community, you build also an environment where you can see hope, brotherhood, sisterhood, and a future. And you get the healing only when you got into that kind of environment, a mini environment, which we have the capacity to set up. And I think there's no other way than the way of healing. All of us need healing. And remove the feeling of guilt, and renew our hope. This is a very important work. So the work for the environment should include. We should bring a spiritual dimension to the work of protecting the environment. With our spiritual dimension, we cannot solve the problem. So the role of meditation, the role of community building, the role of healing and transforming in our daily life is very crucial for the environment. You cannot just have projects and initiatives and working without taking care of the suffering inside. And I think it's possible that we can bring that kind of spiritual dimension into the city life.
We live such a fragmented life now. We live in a shell. Most of us in Canada live in big cities. where it's easy to think, well, as long as we have a few parks where nature is protected, where I can go camping or playing, then we don't need nature because we create our own environment. And my most important issue is my job. I need a job to make money to buy the things that I want. And so the economy comes to dominate our lives. And what I've certainly spent a lot of time trying to remind people that we're still animals, we're still biological creatures, and that without the fundamental things that Aboriginal people refer to as the four sacred elements, earth, air, fire, and water, we can't even live. I think we've forgotten these very, very elementary things, that air is what keeps us alive from the moment we're born to the last breath, that we're filled up with water, we're basically a big blob of water, and that we are the earth through the food that comes out of the soil that we make into our bodies. That's in a way approaching that sense of a place.
I think we can initiate people to the practice of enjoyment, nature, life. I think the city can organize a no-car day from time to time. People do not use their car, just walk. And the mayor and other officials will come to the park and do walk communication with the population. We don't need a car. We need someone who tell us how to enjoy making steps and breathing in and out and get in real touch with that beautiful flower, which is part of the kingdom of God that is available in the here and the now for our nourishment and healing. Millionaire in Switzerland invited us to come to his house. He has a very beautiful garden, very park. But he's so busy. And because he invited us to his home, the first time he had the time to enjoy the park in his house. So busy. So the kingdom of God is available in the here and the now with all the wonders, but we do not have the time to enjoy. And it's not difficult to enjoy. Just breathe in and out mindfully in order to bring your mind back to your body and to be established in the here and the now. And then when we touch anything, that anything belongs to the kingdom of God and we get the nourishment and healing, that is a kind of peace education, happiness education that we need. I think parents should need that kind of practice. School teachers should need that kind of practice, and that does not cost anything. So why don't we organize a no-car day every month? Why don't we organize walking directly with the mayor in the city park? Why don't we sit down and enjoy each other like that? That is learning how to live, how to enjoy every life. You don't need to consume in order to be happy.
So I think probably I'm surprised that one of your monks hasn't been up here to tap me on the shoulder and say that I've kind of let this go on too long, because I have. So thank you so much, Thich Nhat Hanh, David, Gregor. It was a very special moment for our city for you to come and visit us.
I'm very happy to come to your beautiful green city. And you set an example for all of us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was a discussion with Thich Nhat Hanh, David Suzuki, and David Suzuki Foundation Chair Jim Hogan, which took place in Vancouver, British Columbia, in 2011. We played that in light of the fact that Thich Nhat Hanh recently passed away on January 22nd, and which I guess, in terms of numerology, or it's 1-22-22 that he passed away on. And he is obviously a very famous Buddhist monk. He was a peace activist, a prolific author, a poet, a teacher, and a founder of the Plum Village tradition. And he was a major influence on Western practices of Buddhism. So thanks for listening to our show today on Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Ryan Young, and we're going to leave you with some music. But before we do that, we'll let you know our email. You can always email us at equilibrium@ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/EquilibriumCKUTMontreal. And you can also look at our affiliated podcast, which is called the Equilibrium Radio Podcast, which is on Spotify. And no, we're not taking it off Spotify. And also, we have a little website, which is equilibriumradio.weebly.com. You have been listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. And I'm going to play a song, which seems apropos for the times, by the band Muse. And this is the song called Uprising.
Yeah. man. Them fi know you're the man, pop it insane, I play for the girl in your seat. Downtown sound, represent for me, ladies.
If you wanna run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride. I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop.
One of the greatest, ain't no debating on it. I'm still levitated, I'm heavily medicated. Ironic, I gave him love and they end up hating on me. She told me she loved me and she been waiting. Been fighting hard for your love and I'm running thin on my patience. Needing someone to hug, even took it back to the basics. You see what you got me out here doing? Might have threw me off, but can't nobody stop the movement. Let's go. Left foot, right foot, levitating. Pop stars, do a leap with the baby. I had to lace my shoes for all
the... Feel the beat!
Wait a minute, that's too fast.
Now what?
Kick it over here, baby pop!
CKUT, yo, yo, this is for your mind, soul, and spirit. Plus your positive vibes, masters at work, you gotta hear it. And West Indian rhythms on Saturday night. Roots, rock, reggae, I keep it tight. Man child, hitting switches, keep it right. This